Hello, I'm Toby Fox from 1.5 million New Homes, the Local Government Challenge, sponsored by Redloft and Waites. So we're investigating the role of local councils in delivering the government's national ambition to build 1.5 million new homes. And to do that, I've come to the London Borough of Barking and Dagenham. The council here has delivered more council homes in recent years than any other council through its wholly owned development company called Be First. And in this episode, I'm talking to Anna Sinner, who is head of consultancy, and Danny Taylor, who's a senior project manager at Be First. So Anna, tell us where we are and what's being delivered here.
We are on the Gascoigne Estate. So this is one of the largest estate regeneration projects, I'd say, in East London, mm-hmm. and certainly the largest in Barking and Dagenham. Obviously, it's been going on for many years. You know, it's a long process to work with local residents who are sort of on site. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that process of moving people to new homes and building additional homes mm-hmm. Has been something that we've been working on, you know, the whole time that Be First has been together, but also, you know, the council was working on it much before that as well. But it's been really exciting to so rapidly, you know, kind of build, you know, hundreds and hundreds of homes over the last 5 years on this estate, and to see some really high quality public spaces, to see how the site really embeds itself within sort of existing parts of the neighbourhood, and also, you know, build some, you know, lovely new homes as well.
And which part of the Gascoigne estate is this specifically?
So this is what we call Gascoigne West Phase 2. Mm-hmm. So this is probably the newest part of the estate that's sort of near completion. Mm-hmm. But we're on site on other phases as well as we speak. And then there's even more that will be coming through the planning process in the hopefully near future.
We've been hearing an awful lot about planning reform recently. The government has ticked all its boxes, all the things it said it was going to do in its manifesto, it's doing or done. So what difference is that making?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting. You know, obviously planning reform is something that's been talked about over, you know, many, many years. And it's really encouraging to see such quick action on reforming, you know, both at the, you know, the national level on lots of that, which is wonderful. I think a lot of it is actually the intent behind it and the emphasis that has been given to that. And that's coming through in appeal decisions as well. So I do think that gives confidence as to the importance and, you know, how key it is to build new homes. I think, you know, as we're all aware, it does still come back to funding a lot of the time. So as much as I think lots of, you know, positive moves in terms of planning, you know, there's still a way to go to get those schemes to come through.
What's your favourite thing that's come through planning reform?
I think probably, and it's not as much of an issue here, but I work across the country, mm-hmm. is actually loosening up some of those elements to do with the green belt, grey belt as mm-hmm. well, just to consider other areas. You know, it's still very strict, you know, and there's a lot of criteria. But again, it is just that sort of intent and importance and just really putting it up that hierarchy of issues that, you know, planners have to deal with.
And what else needs to change in planning going forward for more homes to be built?
Yeah, I mean, I think in these really difficult times, you know, obviously partnership working and, you know, obviously in terms of funding and joint ventures, that's going to be really important. But I think obviously just that, you know, partnership working and an approach of local authority planning departments and then working with, you know, people submitting those applications to really, you know, drive things forward, positively approach the negotiations. There'll need to be some flexibility just in terms of, you know, the types of affordable homes and where they're delivered. You know, certainly one of the approaches we're thinking about in terms of our sort of pipeline is taking a more portfolio approach. Mm-hmm. So not every site, you know, has the full affordable homes on it, mm-hmm. but across the sort of portfolio that can kind of work and overall deliver the sort of requirements that we need.
And that overall being across the borough or across a bigger area?
Yeah, across the borough. I think we're also you know, looking at scale and strategically how that works. Obviously, you know, the new towns is an interesting approach. We're sort of very much looking at South Barking, but also the connections happens, you know, across to Thamesmead, mm-hmm. what's happening in Beckton Riverside, the mm-hmm. Royal Docks, and seeing that whole area as a whole. And a lot of that really comes down to sort of the infrastructure that we need as well, and really using the kind of ability for, I suppose, public sector funding of infrastructure to unlock homes across boundaries, very much so, because that infrastructure, you know, crosses boundaries. And we need to look at it strategically.
For the sake of people like me who just don't know what we're talking about, you build a station in one place, and that means that people in a much wider area than that one place get to benefit from the fact that a new station is there.
Yeah, definitely. And just, you know, all these areas are very interconnected, and it works in a very dynamic way. They're not sort of linear in and out, you know. People move in a variety of ways, and thinking about that and where employment areas might be as well, you know, is really key.
Is there not a danger in that of creating areas of a borough or of a city that have a concentration of affordable homes in them and other areas that have no affordable homes? Is that not just ghettoisation?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we're looking at that sort of portfolio approach maybe more across Barking and Dagenham. And a lot of that, you know, for an example, here on the Gascoigne Estate, we've built a lot of affordable homes. And actually it's about thinking about that balance and whether there's more private homes that are needed in these areas as well. So it's really, you know, I think that's a real issue. But actually looking at the sort of the very local issues and how you might build that sort of mix of homes. And affordability means different things in different areas based on local populations. You know, it's a really unique set of circumstances. And I think, you know, even going back to some of the planning, you know, elements, you know, the GLA sort of published sort of some new incentives to sort of deliver things just before Christmas. And, you know, lots of really positive things, but it's like across London and just the differences are really quite unique. And so, you know, when we looked at that as a team, you know, internally, it's like, you know, the intent is there, you know, and that's positive to open up negotiations and doing things differently. But it doesn't work in Barking, you know, to do with our value, like the values of homes and how that sort of viability sort of fits together. So there does need to be that sort of more nuanced, bespoke approach to actually really unlocking some of that funding to get things moving.
Our viewers, one of our viewers in particular, has written in saying, can you ask councils about the building safety regulator? Like, we had to react to Grenfell. We needed better safety regulations. And the building safety regulator's point is an awful lot of stuff was going unnoticed in building design, building construction. So it really needs to be governed. But that whole process is really holding up development at the moment. What's the story as you see it?
Yeah, I mean, the Building Safety Act and, you know, the regulator and the like, you know, it's obviously really crucial and very, very important. No one disputes that. I think the difficulty was just in terms of actually deciding on what some of those regulations were and when second steers were required. And there was quite a lot of uncertainty that was created, which when you're dealing with something that's so complex and has such a huge impact, really didn't help. We do have a little bit more certainty on that. But I think just, you know, as a sector, you know, the sort of building safety regulator and you know, building control surveyors, you know, they're really under-resourced. There's not enough people in that industry. They've had to make a massive change in the way they're sort of educated and regulated. So that has, it's kind of not been sort of as efficient as I think it could be. So I do think that's a really key thing, given we're in a little bit of a stalled sort of situation at the moment, that we really need to try and sort of resolve that, both from a sort of, you know, resourcing and skills sort of element, but, you know, real certainty on, you know, the regulations and how they're going to be implemented, to not sort of cause, you know, future delays when we need to build, you know, so many homes and so quickly as well.
What else needs to change, Anna, to get more homes built?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the other things that's going to be really important is, you know, some of those sort of design skills potentially more internally within local authorities. Mm-hmm. So we have sort of a design team within Be First, and they're really key to, you know, all those stages of bringing a application and a development forward, both assessing it from the planning side, but then also in terms of the sort of embedded in a team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is very much when you're working with architectural teams, to have someone with the skills and knowledge to be able to challenge, to be able to interpret and really, you know, make sure the design is a quality and an efficiency that, that we require. And that's something I think local authorities really need to think about moving forward. We also work really closely with our colleagues at the council in terms of their sort of employers' requirements as well. And, you know, it seems a little bit mad that every local authority has a different set of employers' requirements. Yeah. And one of the things our team is sort of thinking about working on is, you know, whether we can combine with some other local authorities and try and standardise some of that.
Okay. Can you just unpack employers' requirements for viewers?
Yeah, so, you know, it's very much about, you know, when you're sort of setting what your sort of, I suppose, your basic standards are to meet, and whether that's to do with sort of sustainability or, you know, certain specifications of lifts and the like. You know, we need to maybe have a more standardised approach to some of that, rather than, you know, every design team starting again to design and then actually build something slightly different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So are you currently talking to other local authorities about standardising that?
Yeah.
When do you think that might, what's the likelihood of that happening and over
what
period?
I mean, it's something that maybe, you know, we've got sort of a set of sort of design officers that we're working with from about 10 other local authorities, but also maybe thinking about how the GLA could play a role in that as well, across London approach.
Anna Sinnott, thank you very much indeed for your contribution to getting 1.5 million new homes built.
Thank you very much.
I mean, there is still funding, but it's not completely gone. But what it means is that everything that we do now is we have to be more, we have to involve more competition into the process. So we're trying to push the price point down with inflation going up and, dare I say it, employers' national insurance going up as well, because that's been pushed back to me. Right, where I'm trying to push down prices, contractors are coming back to me and saying, but actually, Danny, across the whole supply chain, all of our labour costs just went up. So you're trying to push it down and that's going up. So something's squeezing, something's got to give in the middle, which is potentially going to be, well, we're saying their profit. The other thing I need to add into here is our framework. We've actually increased the size of the number of contractors on our framework as well.
Yeah.
So in the idea behind that is to increase competition, to drive the prices down.
Yeah.
But there's only so far, as you've just said, that you can actually drive that price.
Yeah.
Because people will go bust and we will be, as you say, again, left high and dry. We've got to be very careful that we don't become this race to the bottom. So there is only so far that you can push it. So we've all got to be very aware that our contractors are making a profit. If they don't, then we're all in trouble. The other thing we've tried to introduce here is bringing our contractors in early, which is a bit of a change because usually you get an architect here and they'll design a scheme. You get it through to REBA 3, you get it through to planning, and then the...
I'm just going to interrupt, sorry, REBA 3, that's part of the kind of official Royal Institute of British Architects
correct.
Process in the design of any building, and it's got stages.
That is
stage
correct.
One, REBA stage two, REBA stage three.
Yeah.
What is REBA stage three?
REBA 3 would be when you've actually got your detailed plans to go to be submitted to your local planning authority.
Right.
That's where we're at.
Okay,
so at this point, it's all architect-driven.
Yep.
Architects and consultants.
And then you bring the contractor in at stage three to say, okay, how do we build this?
And they say, well, you can't afford to do that with the money you've got.
Yeah.
All right, that is the typical response that you get. And then you go back to the building and say, well, what can we take out of it?
Yeah.
So you lose all the lovely balconies, you lose this, you lose that, and you get half the building that you thought you were going to get.
Yeah.
And that's the situation.
Yeah.
So.
But you've got lovely buildings.
We have.
So how have you managed to do that? How have you avoided that situation?
Direct delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Cost overruns, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So
it cost more than you thought it was going to to build that.
Yeah.
But it was worth paying that price because you've got good quality.
I don't think it's ever worth paying the price. Okay. I actually think that we need to be better as well, which we're trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so our new process is, let's get the contractor in right at the beginning.
Right.
So which we call early contractor involvement, which is the tender process.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put it out as a bid, like anything else we do. Mm-hmm. We say, right, this is what we want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the scheme. Mm-hmm. Look at what we're trying to deliver in here. It's an open book for you. Here's the bit of land. We want to maximise the viability of the land. They will then come in with their architect. They will go through the process with us and they'll throw a few ideas together.
Yeah.
And then we'll look at the viability of different schemes.
Yeah.
Gives us a starting point.
Yeah.
We all know if we build this, it's going to be affordable and viable. All the items that we may have removed back in REBA 3 when it went through planning and everything else, we take them out at the beginning.
Okay.
Because they're looking at the price point.
Yeah.
Right. So they're very commercial, unlike the architect. They're saying, right, okay, if you put in these particular concrete frames instead of stone, they're going to look very similar, but it's going to save you X amount of thousands of pounds.
Okay, so you're not saying you are going to get all the lovely bells and whistles. What you're saying is we're not going to promise all the lovely bells and whistles and then take them away.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
However, what the contractors will do is they will come up with some very clever alternatives.
Okay.
All right. So it's going to look very, very similar.
Yeah.
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 So you walking past it, you're going to say, it's still a good building.
Yeah.
But we've got the price down. Right. Yeah. So this is where things have changed. And we've only done it fairly recently.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I've got to give credit to contractors.
Which ones?
Murphy's, Jay Murphy and Son, I would say, have been quite instrumental in my ear about get us in early. And they're actually doing it for us on one scheme.
Mm-hmm.
There's other contractors working on different bits and pieces, which I'm not involved with, but I know Murphy's have done a good job on this so far.
Yeah.
But that's the early contractor. This is step one.
Yeah.
All right. So they'll come back to us as, here's a scheme.
Yeah.
And we look at it as, yeah, it looks viable. We could actually run with this.
Yeah.
Now, we do a PCSA, which is the pre-construction service agreement.
Yeah.
Which is, again, is another tender process which goes out. From there, it's more of an in-depth investigation survey stage. What we're looking for there really is all of the right to light surveys and everything else, but specifically what's in the ground.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
All right.
So because pipes and wires and skeletons.
Exactly, exactly that. Because these are the things that we found on so many projects where an architect is not really looking underground. They're looking at what is this going to look like.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's their job, yeah? They want to build lovely places.
Yeah.
Whereas the contractor is going to know that I'm going to be building this, I'm going to be making sure there is nothing underground that's actually going to stop us doing it.
Yeah.
So we've got a really good PCSA period.
Yeah.
So that's step two.
Okay.
Now we've got all this, we can go and build our scheme. So either the contractor's architect comes in again, or we can bring or go out to tender for another architect.
Mm-hmm.
With all of that information now that they've got, this is how we're going to build it.
Yeah.
This is the finishes that we're going to be using.
Yeah.
These are the hazards and risks are underground.
Yeah.
Build a scheme, or draw up a scheme now that we can take to planning.
Yeah.
We take it to planning, get approval.
Yeah.
We then go out to tender again.
Yeah.
Probably the same group of contractors again.
Yeah.
And obviously best bid that comes in will actually win that contract. Right. So there's no guarantee that the contractor who started the process with the early contractor involvement will actually be the contractor who's actually building it.
Yeah. So there's no jobs for the boys element to that where they're designing it, so therefore they're gonna win the pitch to
it can't be.
Yeah.
No,
yeah
it's public money. And obviously we're the gatekeepers of that.
Yeah.
And we've got to do that properly. But I would say is that if like you were the contractor and if you've actually done all this work on the project, you're gonna know where the risks are and where the risks come. So, and me, if I'm a competitive contractor, I'm going to think, risk here, risk there, risk there. My price is going to be a lot higher.
Yeah.
So you should actually come in at the best price.
So you do get an advantage, which is worth the effort that you put in at the beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So the whole idea behind this and where it fits with the 1.5 million homes is that we're trying to push that price point down for direct delivery. If we do that, then that's a win for all of us.
So that wraps up another episode of 1.5 million new homes, the local government challenge, sponsored by Redloft and Waite. We're going to be back in a few days with another episode, and we look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, if you like what you've seen, please do click like or subscribe. It really helps us. Thank you very much for watching.